Hello, everyone, and welcome to Coffee with Innovate Finance, our podcast series where we speak to industry leaders on financial innovation and fintech. Our podcasts are available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts. I'm Veronica Glab, Head of Engagement at Innovate Finance, and today I'm joined by Maysam Rizvi, CEO and founder of Elefinti. Elefinti is the socially conscious debt management platform. Maysam, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Veronica. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, Maysam. So you've got a pretty exciting story that I would really love to dive into today. And I understand that Elefinti started with what ended up being a life-changing trip to Iceland, but maybe not life-changing the way we usually think in the eat, pray, love sense. Can you talk us through that story and how it led to starting your company?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 10 years ago, I was a young banker, really eager and ambitious about my career. And then, suddenly the financial crisis happened. And as you know, it was one of the biggest shocks to banking in recent history. And as a consequence of that, I was sent out to Iceland, which, if you recall, had defaulted.
Yes.
And it just opened my eyes, that experience of trying to recover funds from a state and institutions in a country where people were losing their houses and their homes. There was civil unrest. There was businesses going under. It was an eye-opening experience. And of course, we avoided that in some of the major economies like UK and US, despite some of the challenges. And some of that was because of the huge amount of quantitative easing, 700 billion, for example, in the UK and similarly across the pond,
Right.
and in Europe as well. And it just opened my eyes to asking some questions in terms of my own ethos and where I stand in terms of, as a banker, I'm here to take money away. Did I contribute to this? And then, what do you do when people have to decide between food and paying their bills and things like that? What is the right human response? And that just shook me to the core. And obviously, I realized something at that point as well, is that I didn't know about banking as much as I thought I did. And so I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what banking stands for and how it works. And I changed roles. I used to be front facing, client facing, and I started doing more back facing roles in organizations purposely to figure out how banking works and how things work. And I ended up, being CFO, for example, for a business in JP Morgan, and then going on to becoming head of change, where I started thinking about how we can start changing organization from within. Governance structures, how we deliver services, et cetera. And, I realized that banking is set in its ways. It's too big a ship. It's a Titanic, which is not going to change course easily, not by one man. And I think that's where, it was clear to me that the answers lay outside of the organization. And I think, when you start thinking about system change, there are just two ways. One is top down or bottom up. And, for me, my skills, my knowledge, et cetera, it made sense for me to try and do it bottom up, and which is where, we started setting up Elefinti, and then, people started joining, and then, it's become a mission and a purpose, and, it's fantastic.
It's really interesting to hear it. And I feel like we could go off on so many tangents here, like, starting with the parallels of the 2008 crisis and that cost of living crisis to, the civil unrest that we're actually seeing in the UK here today. But, we could also go in on your very refreshing take and going on a very inwards journey within the system of banking. But can you tell us, as you have come into this founder journey, tell us a little more about Elefinti and what is your company's vision and mission?
Elefinti is is a technology company. It's a fintech company. I mean, what we're trying to do and what we realized, from all the work that I did trying to understand banking was that, for example, when we're thinking about taking out a loan, and I'm just talking about retail banking at the moment. If you go out and try and look for a loan, you can do that within a few clicks. Literally everything is automated to a degree where, your credit checks are happening in the background, your identification checks are happening in the background. You can be approved within a matter of minutes to open a new account, to get a new loan, for example, money coming directly into your account. And I think all of that lies on the foundation of great technology working across a number of segments like credit rating agencies, banking, identification checks, and things like that. But when you come to the other end of the spectrum, which is like a person who's been with a bank or been with a credit company and has been paying, suddenly is unable to pay, what happens to them at that stage? Suddenly they're in this process where everything is manual. The department that handles within banks these cases is completely manual. The systems that they keep the information on are sometimes really archaic. And so, that's where we saw the opportunity that nobody's really thinking about this. And the reason why nobody was thinking about this was because at the time when we started thinking about it only used to contribute to 1 or 2% of the creditor's portfolio, in terms of delinquent credit, in terms of distressed credit. Now, as you're seeing more and more cost of living crisis, et cetera, that's increasing the challenges on the portfolio. And obviously, that means there's a higher, challenge for managing that manually. So from our perspective, it was about building technology that can enable that. And that's exactly what we've done. So our technology works across creditors, debt advisors, and the customers themselves, the end individuals. And what we try to do is we try to help creditors with self-service solutions. So basically, we help connect creditors, debt advisors, and customers, the individuals, into an ecosystem which allows for helping them with managing distressed credit. So the way we do that is for creditors, it's a platform which allows them to allow for self-service solutions for their customers, for repayments, et cetera, and managing their customer profiles and managing their customer engagement through that and reducing the cost overall of doing that. And of course, improving recoveries for them. And if that fails, then they need to be passed on to debt advisors within the UK. And the way that works is that we've automated the whole workflow for debt advisors. And we co-built this with a debt advisor, a leading debt advice agency in London. And so the way then it takes over from that point is that the whole process is automated. Before, it used to be a completely manual process. You can imagine people coming in with, their bills, et cetera, and then building a financial profile and then, all of that stuff, and then going to the debt advice. It can take up to 2 years. And, and just the data collection process could be 3, 4 weeks. And we've reduced that to 20 minutes.
I remember, I might be aging myself a little bit, but I'm an older millennial, and I remember when I was a teenager and my father was trying to teach me about how to build credit history and and set up my own personal banking and just the stacks of paper that you have that is now in 10 years been completely eliminated and digitized. But it sounds like you've really leveraged technology with Elefinty to circumvent a lot of the manual processes in making finance more accessible in what is also a highly regulated industry. Can you speak a little bit more to the role that fintech has in building a positive financial future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think over the last 5, 10 years, I think technology, especially fintech, has grown enormously. I mean, it's, you can just pick up any stats and there's evidence there. And, it's on the background of a number of things. One is customer expectations have changed dramatically. iPhone did that hugely for how people now expect services to work. There's change in technology, there's AI, there's machine learning, there's been a huge leapfrog of technology in terms of what we can do, big data. then regulation has improved as well. You know, the FCA and others have taken a forefront, open banking, PSD2, for example, you know, great regulations to support customers and engagement with customers. And, you know, what we're facing with, of course, is increased competition. We've got retailers and, you know, you've got other creditors and fintech companies coming into where just incumbent banks were. And again, that's because of some of the regulation as well. And what's that created, of course, is the perfect opportunity, but also perfect storm for the incumbents, for worker or opportunity for fintechs. And one of the things that technology does, and I'm going a really long way about answering your question, but there's a reason for
No,
that,
please
because
go right ahead. This is our time to
and
geek out.
so what that does effectively is that, you know, it allows us the opportunity to create solutions in meaningful ways, whether it's international transfers or, you know, payments or, you know, systems or infrastructure like we're doing. And the benefit, of course, is that the customers get better services out of this. There's also a challenge, and this is the ultimate challenge of technology. Technology is just a tool, you know, it just accelerates, you know, whatever the underlying solution is. And so, you know, at the moment, and this is where I just want to talk about the positive financial future that you talked about. The
Sure.
issue is that if technology is working in a way where it is accelerating whatever the underlying processes and systems are, you know, just means that if the process and system is not right for people, it will accelerate failure. And you know, we've seen this with the failure of some banks. We've seen this with, you know, the failure of supporting customers. And what we need is purpose-driven, positive systems that, you know, take care of both the intended consequences and the unintended consequences of technology, so that we are then driving a positive future for everyone. Because if your underlying portfolio of customers is not strong enough, then the whole house of cards crumbles down. And I think this is the challenge that we are faced with.
And what would you say are some of the creditor portfolio challenges in that current environment, and how would you go about improving that?
Yeah, I mean, we particularly work in the retail space, and I think I'll speak more to that. But you know, there are similar challenges in the corporate space, et cetera. In the retail space, for example, you know, currently, you know, ONS data shows that your average income for households is about, you know, 31. So your average expense is about 31,000 pounds, and your average income is about 28.
Oh,
And
wow.
that discrepancy means that most households can't afford, you know, some of the things that others have. And you know, with the 10%, you know, plus inflation that we're seeing, what we're going to see is a huge burden on household budgets.
Yeah,
Income is not
I've heard
rising
that.
as quickly. Yeah, and the other issue is that if you start thinking about, you know, the Bank of England rate, which is rising by, you know, if they raise it by 1%, you know, on a mortgage, that's like £200 per month increase, right, on your budget. Council tax have just gone up. So for houses, it's, you know, about £100 to £200 cost on your monthly budget. And then grocery bills are going up as well because things are becoming more expensive. So if you start stacking those up, within 1 year, we're going to see challenges on the household budget that we did not see for a decade. So what that means for underlying portfolios are that, you know, and usually big banks are really bad at this. And I know because I used to work for big banks, that they usually see 2 month old data. You know, they work off 2 month old data, the decision makers. By the time it filters through to the decision makers, it's already 2 months old. And so what they're seeing on their portfolios is all green, but the reality on the ground is that people are already struggling. And so they're borrowing on their credit, they're paying mortgages on their credit cards, for example, et cetera, which can be, as you can, as you can imagine, a huge challenge because your, the interest rate differential alone can completely decimate your finances. So, and people who've never faced financial challenges are now in this bracket as well. So underlying portfolio, where you were seeing 1 or 2% of failure on credit, that's going to rise to 30, 40%. And, there's going to be a housing crisis as well, potentially, because if people can't pay, right now people are prioritize paying rent and mortgages over everything else because there's a house over your roof. But if you have to make a decision between food and paying rent, then, people will choose food,
Yeah.
for themselves and for their children. And so
It's really
that is,
challenging, isn't it? Because
yeah.
I actually didn't know that the data that banks are seeing is so out of date. But it does actually explain a lot because when I've spoken with a number of Innovate Finance members and stakeholders in the fintech and financial space, and whatever the current government calculation for the rate of inflation was, the real rate of inflation was actually estimated to be a few percent above that. So if the rate of inflation, the statistics published are 12%, it was actually possibly closer to 18. There's a massive difference when those percentages start to compound. So now hearing that, I'm not surprised to see that there are many people who are having to prioritize between housing and paying for their food. And how have you found that the elephanty customers have been affected by that? What kind of choices do you see them making that you can help with?
So our customers are mainly institutions, and then of course we serve the institutions' customers as well. So, what we're seeing, of course, is that there's an increased demand from institutions for our solution. We've got more people, especially in the energy sector, the housing association sector, the debt advice sector. We're seeing a lot of interest. Banks still are a little bit lagging behind on this, as I said, but they've seen obviously their arrears rising, and they're obviously contacting, and they're more open to those conversations. So we're definitely seeing that in terms of the underlying customers, the feedback we're getting, of course, from our customers is that their, for example, debt advice has increased about 200 to 300%, over a couple of months. So the number of people seeking debt advice has just increased. And then of course, if you start thinking about, people in arrears, we've heard statistics like the number of people who are behind on payments jumped by 57%. So, things like that mean that there are more and more people who are going to be behind on payments, for basic services. So yeah, I mean it's a challenging time. And then of course you were talking about the real inflation versus reported inflation. There's the other aspect that, the poorer you are, the more inflation you see. It's incumbent on how services are delivered to them. For example, if you're on a prepaid meter, you get a higher bill, for example. Now there are calls for fixing that. There's also agreement on standardizing pricing and things like that. But there are other things as well, like travel. People who are poorer live outside of London, mainly have to travel in, and so on and so forth. So there's always other challenges associated with that. So the real inflation for people who are on the poorer end of the spectrum is much, much more higher than people who are on middle income and higher income. Because you get subsidized for paying upfront, for example, or going on a monthly plan, et cetera.
That's true. Yeah, there's a metaphor about how that concept works, where you have the poorer man can only afford a 5-pound pair of boots, while it's a lower quality product. But it's more immediately accessible, whereas the wealthier man can afford the $10 pair of boots or the 10-pound pair of boots, and they can pay the upfront cost, but they get much more wear out of that pair of boots. And and then they're not replacing them as often. And I think you can see where the metaphor is going with that. But it's very true that there is that stratification. And do you actually have any case studies of how you have worked LF&T with any building societies or any other financial institutions to improve on their own insights?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so we're working very closely with a number of customers, and what we see from our research. So, in terms of our debt advisor, for example, we co-built that with a partner. And we can say that it is, well, not just us, but our customers are saying it's the best solution on the market. It was really important to us to work with the customers when we were building these things because it's one of those things that, customer first. We say customer first, but it's usually more in a saying than an action, and we really put it to action. And what we've seen from our solution, of course, is that the amount of time it takes to collect data, we reduce that dramatically. The amount of time it takes to get to a solution is reduced dramatically. We have an intelligent solution engine as well. And then we are building relationships with other benefits providers, grant providers as well, to augment household income as well. So, supporting the underlying customer with additional resources to improve repayments and things like that, which help our customers improve recoveries. All of that means that from our perspective, it leads to a more efficient solution. And of course, there has to be a customer centricity from the customer from the institutional point of view as well. So the people we work with at the moment, they're very much customer centric. They're the first movers, of course, on our solutions. They understand the value of focusing on the underlying problem, which is the household budget. And so, they're more appreciative, they're more willing to accommodate household requests. So, for example, if you can afford only £5 of payment per month, they're willing to do that and things like that. And so, that helps with the underlying pressures on whatever. So, because the other challenge, of course, is, right, I mean, the reason why £5 payments, for example, are necessary is, like, if you pay nothing, you're classified as defaulted, which means, it affects your, it goes on your credit file, it affects your credit score, which means any future borrowing or any future products and services you buy are more expensive. So the pressures mount on you if your credit score falls. So, again, this is a systemic challenge, and for us, there are systemic solutions to these things, but I think there will be time for that systemic solutions to come into place. But from our perspective, it's about building up from the bottom up. And if we can provide that for each institution to manage their customers really well, and support them in that time, and then, of course, supporting the underlying customers through grants, benefits, et cetera, what we can do is then from the bottom up, start building up the solution for, not failing the economy, so to speak. And I think that's what we're trying to do. Elephant.
Absolutely. And I think that's part of what makes LF&T so disruptive is you've taken such a systemic look at, what's going on in the macro environment to better serve your customers and your community. And I actually want to pivot back to your journey as a founder for a second, because you've come, so full circle from, LF&T being inspired by the 2008 financial crisis, and you've now also led your team through more and more unprecedented times, including the COVID-19 crisis and the cost of living crisis that is currently unfolding. Can you talk us through a little bit about how that founder journey has been for you and sort of share your experience about any challenges that you have faced along the way?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, I mean, for me, of course, like what I would just say is the purpose and mission are very fundamental to driving you as a founder. Because the challenges you face can sometimes be overwhelming and could just put you off the founder journey itself, which is not a straight path, right? We know it's got pitfalls, et cetera. So, having that clear purpose, having that clear mission is so helpful, especially in the bad days, to push through some of the challenges. For me personally, of course, I was spoiled by working in banking for almost a decade. And so, when I came into the startup world, I had bad habits from working in corporates, which are, you rely on large teams, you don't roll up your sleeves quickly enough, you do other things. So I had to relearn what it is to run a startup. And I had some good friends to rely on who showed me the path as well. And so for me, the journey's been up and down, of course. And then of course, in the beginning, a lot of people didn't believe us, right? When we were talking about the challenges, the fundamental underlying challenges, which was that household budgets were getting deteriorated. And we knew that the next recession would be bad. Obviously, we didn't predict a pandemic or, the war or inflation. And so for us, it was a case of when we started talking to people earlier on, they didn't believe us that, oh, things are going to get bad. And so it was a challenging time to be working in a space where we said, we know what's going to happen and you'll need these tools. And people saying, no, I think we're good with our manual processes.
I
But
guess
it
hindsight
quickly
is
turned around.
2020. What would you say are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned as a founder?
Yeah, I think the biggest lesson is that, you need to not think you're alone. You need to have a good team around you. And you need to find people who share your mission and vision. And when you get that, the multiplying effect of that is just incredible. And it's about being vulnerable. It's about being open, and it also being open to working with other people as well. I think, collaborating with our customers, for example, it's been fantastic. And the way we thought it would work, obviously you have your own perceptions of how things should work. That's not always the case. So you have to be open to different ways of it working. But if it's leading to the same goal, then that should be okay, and being brave enough to take those steps or into the unknown where you're not sure whether it'll work out or not.
That's such a positive note to end us on. But before I close off, is there any exciting news that you would like to share, or anything that we should be on the lookout for with Elefanty?
Yeah, so we're really excited that with our partners, we've actually launched EliHub, which is a physical and digital space for customers to come and seek support and debt advice, which means that they can use the offices of our customers to walk in and be connected to the same level of service that they would if they accessed it digitally. So we're really excited about that. And yeah. Please look out for those announcements.
Oh, well, congratulations. And Mason, thank you so much for joining us. That is all for this episode. Thank you to everyone for tuning in. Please keep an eye out for upcoming episodes. All of our previous episodes are available on our website, so please take a look at that catalog for many more insights on fintech and financial innovation. And once again, thank you to our guest today, Meisam Rizvi, CEO and founder of Elefanty. And thank you all at home for listening. Join us next time for Coffee with Innovate Finance. Bye for now.